Welcome to the Hollywood Persona Podcast. Here are your hosts, Mitch and Ann.
That's not going to work.
Hopefully, I've been having troubles where, like, when I see, like, we are hearing it turned down, but I don't know if the people are hearing it. But anyways, welcome to another episode of the Hollywood Persona. We have not been here in a little while, so apologies for that. I want to thank everyone for, you know, sticking through. I am moving, and I've got a lot of personal life stuff going on that has just made life, you know, it's life, it's difficult. But and then Mr. Ant, who I'm here with as always, he went to Dallas to see the solar eclipse. How was that?
It was awesome, man. It was so cool. Yeah, so that definitely interrupted 4 days of us being able to record there. I saw the 2017 eclipse and really there? Had a good time at it. No, I was in Chicago and I drove down to Illinois, South Illinois, Indiana. And this time it was going to be, you know, through a big part of the United States. Yeah. But it was incredible. It was incredible. It's, you know, I know that lots of people that listen and maybe even you will hear people all over the country or all over North America could see percentages, 80%.
Right.
Even 98%. I had a friend who was in Cabo, Mexico, who saw 98%. But it really is a difference when you see 98, 99% to totality, because the sun is so bright that even 1% of it or 2% lets in enough light to illuminate the day. So you would see a cool, you know, crescent shaped sun, and it would get a little dimmer and maybe feel like you're wearing sunglasses. But with totality, it goes dark as if it is nighttime and the street lights come on, and it is just bizarre. But it was really cool, and I hope to see the next one.
So I live about a half an hour from a place near where my parents live, actually, and I was working, and where they were in that area apparently could have was getting totality. Would that make
sense?
Right.
It does.
Like, would a half an hour distance, like, we never got, like, it never got dark, but it got pretty dark where I was, but, like, apparently half hour away they were getting, because it was right in the line.
That could make a difference, yes. So the width of the eclipse is, like, a couple hundred miles. So you could be 30 minutes away and not have it go completely dark. One of the things I saw while I was in darkness is we went up pretty high in a parking garage, and if you look around at your horizon in 360 degrees, you can see the areas that aren't in total darkness. And so it looks like a sunset kind of all around you. You see the light coming through the clouds, kind of like when you are in a plane and you see rain clouds and you see, like, it's gray all the way to the ground. Kind of the same thing, but it's light. So where I am, it's dark, but I can see 100 miles away and I see the sun coming through the clouds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yes, that's definitely possible.
Okay, because, like, my dad was down there because he owns the grocery store down there. It's in Port Stanley, Ontario. And his grocery store is right across from, like, the river that goes out into Lake Erie. And as soon as it got dark, he watched this, like, all the geese on the river started freaking out, like, getting up and, like, flapping above the water, because they were like, they thought it was bedtime and the day, they were all wrong. They were all confused. And then they settled down once the sun came back out. But
The animals do weird things, and the bugs do weird things. I was in a city center this time. Dallas is a massive city in Texas, and all the building lights on the skyscrapers came on because they turn on when, you know, it gets dark out. So that was really cool to see them all light up and the street lights come on.
That's cool.
So it was very, very cool. So the next eclipse in the North America, there's one that's going to come in a couple of years that will touch Alaska, and that one doesn't really count. It's like Alaska and Russia. It's way up north, and it's in March, so it'll be super cold. Nobody's going to go to that one. There is one in 2026 that is going to go from Iceland down to Spain. So if you're looking for a time to do a Europe trip, August of 26 might be the way to go. So you can see, I could see like maybe going to Barcelona and seeing the eclipse then. That would be super cool. But then in 20 years exactly, there will be one that covers a lot of Canada and Montana in 2044. And then right after that in 2045 is a nice big one across the United States, covering Florida all the way up to like Washington State. So yeah, we got 20 years if you want to see it in North America. So you got to travel.
But what
they happen roughly every 18 months somewhere on the planet.
And then are there different types of eclipses? Because people are saying like this is the last of this type of eclipse. Like we won't get it for another 100 something years.
Yes,
that's what I heard.
There are different types of eclipse. Typically, that means total solar, which is what we have. And there's one called an annular eclipse, and that is where the moon is a little further away, so it doesn't fully cover the disk of the sun. So what it's still cool to see, but you see the sun's bright disk, and then you see the moon around it, so you have a nice stripe of sun around it. That's an annular eclipse. But what you're talking about specifically is this was a particularly close moon, a super moon or harvest moon. There's a few different types of moons. So it was like 4% closer than on average. So yeah, there won't be one of those. But in my opinion, that's not really that much of a distinction because you would still get a total blackout in the ones
in
that I just
certain
mentioned.
Areas. Well, thanks for joining our science and technology
science podcast.
No, I that's what you know, and I always go to you for those kind of questions. So just like the other day I was asking you about a super collider and all that.
Just as I'm just a, you know, listeners, I'm just a fan, a science fan. I love science, physics, astronomy. That whole realm. And I don't have any professional training, but I have invested quite a bit of time in books and lectures over the years. Just because it's, I find it interesting. Movies and science. So whenever there's like a science movie, then I'm there for it. Like The Martian, Interstellar, man. Those really tickle my fancy, you know.
I read that book, The Martian. It was a really good book.
I did too.
I didn't love the movie as much as the book, but I still love the movie. So
you know what? I ended up liking the movie because I thought the book spent like a lot of time on him growing the potatoes and his traveling from his initial site to the new site where he was going to have to take off from. You know, we went night after night with him. And I was like, I'm glad to see the movie cut all that out. Or it was like 2 minutes of scenes from him traveling, you know, saving the batteries, pulling the solar panels out, recharging, packing it back up. He did that for like weeks in the book.
Yeah. And I think I was just more tense for some reason in the book, probably because I read it first. And then in the movie, I knew what was going to happen. So the tension wasn't there. So I remember reading it being very tense, but
me too. Me too. Yeah. And have you gone back to read that author's other books? He's got some other science books, fiction, but science based.
Yeah. He's got another one that everyone's talking about right now that I'm going to put it on my list for sure.
Yeah. Well, they're supposedly making Artemis, which was his follow up to The Martian.
Yes.
And that's what the character's name is, Jazz, and she is in a colony on the moon. And what's cool about him, we should mention his name.
Andy Weir.
Andy Weir. All I could think of was Mark Watney, who's the character in the movie.
I think it's Andy Weir. I'll double check.
It is Andy Weir. Okay. So Andy Weir, his story's kind of cool. And this is such a tangent, but I'll finish in two sentences. He used to publish his writings for free. He's a former NASA scientist or something. Someone read his book. Someone read The Martian on his blog, Random House or somebody, and said, hey, take that down. We want to buy it from you and make it into a movie.
Wow, I have heard that actually.
And so he makes a point to very detailed and correctly research what he's writing. So that whole movie, The Martian, and the book, everything in it had scientific backing except for one thing, which is at the very beginning, the voraciousness of the sandstorm that knocks them around. And the sandstorms on Mars don't get that strong because there's only 1% atmosphere. So the wind isn't enough to knock you over. But other than that, all the other science pretty much is doable as with the current tech.
And so it's almost as scientifically accurate as the human centipede.
Yes. Centipede might be more accurate.
Apparently.
Where's that franchise been?
Gone. Hopefully dead. So today we're going to talk about three films because we're not going to do anything else. We're just going to kind of chat because it's been a little while, and we will be back early next week with another episode where we will talk about some more stuff. We're going to do the first Omen, Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, and Late Night with the Devil. So we got three pretty good
big movies.
Yeah, so we'll
I would say big movies.
Big movies, yes. Literally big. The one thing before we get into it, actually a couple things. One, probably next time we talk, we will do our box office draft for the next quarter. I haven't updated the numbers because I've been moving and a lot of my stuff's been packed away, but I will do the numbers. It's pretty much a clean sweep that Ant has won the first month.
Is that right? Dune.
Yeah, you definitely.
Dune really did that. I guess that makes sense because it's the biggest box office thing of the year.
And then Ghostbusters you had as well.
Right.
But I'll have
which
all the
I
numbers.
Still haven't seen.
I haven't either. I know my youngest wants to see it, but so I'll have those numbers and I'll post them on the
website. Okay, so we'll do that next time.
And the other thing, today I thought of you always talk about your pet peeves in movies. I thought of one of my pet peeves, and I wrote it down and I had to tell you.
Oh, let's hear it.
It is when it is a futuristic movie. A movie set in the future, right? Most of the characters in the movie are interested in old stuff. Because it's easier for the people making the movie to just pretend that this person's into like older stuff so they can use like Reeboks and I got these on eBay. These are 2020 Reeboks or something, right?
Right.
Or
in Back to the Future.
Yes, or like it's like I love the Bee Gees, you know. I can't listen to the new stuff, and I hate that. It's like I don't know.
You're right. That doesn't bug me too much, but as soon as you said it, I immediately thought of Ready Player One. This is Ready Player One's taking place in what, 2060, and they care about the 80s, the 1980s.
Yes.
That would be like us caring about the 40s.
Yes,
ragtime
exactly.
Music and big band. Like maybe there are those. You know, there's a few people out there that still like that stuff. But it's
almost like a trope now. Where in the movie, it's like, okay, like this person is, you know, he's got a record player, and it's like, look, like I don't need these newfangled gadgets, and it's like you sound like an old man.
Yeah.
Like, anyways, so let's get into the first Omen.
Before that, did you want me to mention Civil War?
Right. Yeah. Tell us about that.
So I saw Civil War tonight. That's Alex Garland's fourth after Ex Machina, Men, and
Annihilation.
Annihilation.
Yes.
And I'll just say a few quick words. I thought it was great. It made me uneasy in a good way, in that it felt, oh God, it felt so real and scary in the sense that like, God, this feels like this could happen. Some big thing could boil over. And the only thing that's a little unrealistic, and this is in the trailer, is part of the forces that are fighting is Texas and California being together, that would never happen.
Yeah.
They very much don't agree today. But it's great. You know, listeners, go see it. I brought three friends to it, and all different movie watching backgrounds. You know, some of them don't ever watch movies. One of them told me he goes to the movie three times every 5 years or something is what he said. And they all pretty much enjoyed it. They liked it. So the first half maybe is a little slow to build characters, but the last 45 minutes is awesome and intense. So maybe we can fully review it once you see it.
It's probably my most anticipated of the year. The trailer just fills me with dread, so I can't wait.
Yeah,
hopefully, yep. Maybe next episode we can talk about it. But I am doing cool. a lot of moving this weekend, but I will try.
Okay. All right. So you wanted to get into the first Omen first?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first Omen is a 2024 film directed by Arkasha Stevenson. Don't know much of her work. This is her directorial debut. But she has directed episodes of some movies and stuff. This is a prequel to the 1976 Omen movie, and it stars our main character is a played by Nell Tiger Free is her name. And I think this is one of her first roles. And yeah, we will definitely be talking about her.
I don't know anything else she's been in.
Tawfiq Barhan, Sonia Braga, Ralph Ineson, and Bill Nighy. And there is a little cameo by Charles Dance, which was cool at the beginning. He plays Tywin Lannister in Game of Thrones. But so essentially, it's Rome, 1971. There is this nun. She is asked by this cardinal, played by Bill Nighy, "Hey, I've known you all your life. I can get you in over in Rome. They live in America, but I can get you in over in Rome, and you can become a full nun. And it'll be great training, great learning experience. Like, you got to do this." And so she goes over under the guidance of this man, Cardinal Lawrence, and what else do I say? So things start to go weird. She meets a little girl named Carlita, who, you know, she kind of does the tropey thing where she's drawing like creepy things. She's locked up in the bad room at times, and our main character, played by Nell Tiger Free, Margaret, she reaches out to this young girl and wants to help her, and she starts to realize some things are going wrong with this young girl, and she wants to help. We're not going to spoil anything pretty much past that.
I think we should say the opening scene, which is where, and I think this is in the trailer, we see someone in a ceremonial type situation with a black mask placed over their face, a woman, it looks like she's being impregnated or something of that sort. That's very early. That's like, I think that's the opening scene.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that's safe to say it's the opening scene. So, and then we pick up right where Mitch said, so we know something is going on behind the scenes or deeper at this convent that she is at. And, it slowly starts to unravel. So what else, what did you like about it? Or did you like it?
Wait,
have you seen the original?
I have seen all of the Omen movies. And
okay, cool.
It is all
right.
Reference. Yeah. It is one of my favorite horror franchises. Honestly, the original is great. I love the sequel almost as much as the original. I know not as many people are high on it. So essentially,
cool.
This movie is building right up to it's almost like Rogue One, how Rogue One built right up to the beginning of New Hope. This one brings you right up to the beginning of The Omen, and it shows you how Damien was brought into this world, and so Damien is you just say the name Damien and most people connect that name with this movie. And coming from someone, I want to hear from you first, as someone who hasn't seen any of the originals, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So I have one other question about the originals. Mm-hmm. Do you know I saw in theaters somewhat recently
Immaculate?
The Omen? Or no. Didn't I see The Omen with Nicole Kidman where she's going crazy in the house? Is that disconnected from this?
That's The Others.
The Others. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
So never mind that. So I was, so you want to hear what I think about this movie? I was very impressed by this movie. Yep. Early on, the jumps, there are some jump scares. There's not that many, but there are some that annoy me, that bug me. So that was, I was like, oh, where's this going? Because so I went into this not having seen the trailer and not knowing this was a prequel to that series. So I really didn't know anything about this movie. I kind of expected it to be like The Nun 2 or Immaculate. But it is wildly different. I thought this was very, very good. By the end of it, I was pretty scared. There's some horrifying stuff in this movie that they don't hold back from. They don't shy away from. And I thought the lead actress, Nell Tiger-Free, was really good. She has to go through every emotion in this performance. And she's a newcomer to me, so that makes it even easier for me to buy into her character because I've never seen her before. And then the old nun, the high nun at this church, she was also excellent. Really scary and old and decrepit. And
yes.
You can just tell that she's so willing to do wrong things in the name of, which, you know, is a thing I know you and I both probably don't like about religion, is when it goes too far and they do things that are contradicted supposedly by the book that they follow. So
I thought it was
excellent. And there are some really cool transitions. This is really impressive for a first time filmmaker too. This must've been a passion project. A lot of times what they do with first time filmmakers, we see this all the time, is they have an idea for a movie and the studio says, okay, well, that action movie kind of sounds like we have RoboCop over here. So can you turn your action movie and reboot RoboCop, right? Like, we see that all the time, right, especially with horror. And they'll say, like, that's a good script. And it sounds like, since we own the first Omen, or since we own the Omen franchise, let's build it into that. It doesn't sound like that was the case here, because this really has the touch of someone who seems to care. I was really impressed with it. What about you? What was your take?
I was really impressed with it. Like, so for everything I liked about this movie, there was something I didn't like. It was pretty even keel. There was uneven. I loved something and then something bothered me, and I loved something. It definitely has a feel of the original with the wide shots and some of the camera movements and stuff. It felt very 70s.
I heard that.
Yeah.
I heard a lot of people say there are shots that come from, or even lines. There might've been a line or two that were used.
There's two deaths that happen in this movie that are basically mirroring the deaths from the original.
There's a self-immolation in this movie that is, whew, it's filmed mm-hmm. great. It's horrifying and tragic. And it's the character that does that is pretty scary. Beforehand, yeah. She just seems like something's off about her, the way she smiles, her eyes. They did a great job with that one. Cause you knew something tragic was coming around the corner, but I'll hand it back to you in just a second. I think the best thing, or the most I liked about this, was to me, this felt like it was just very slowly, continually turning up the tension as we went throughout the movie.
Yeah.
You know, we would have some scary scenes, but we never like went back down to the bottom and had to build up again. It kind of slowly built up until the finale. So what can you say, the things that stuck out to you that you didn't love without spoiling anything?
The first half an hour is full of jump scares that were unnecessary. And that's just so disappointing. Like,
I know,
you know,
and you
she
wonder
closed,
if it's a studio note.
Yeah. Like, she closes a fridge and all of a sudden her friend's standing there, or, you know, she turns around a corner and it's like, oh, Mother Gabriel, I didn't know you were, you know, it's like,
yes, like really stupid, dumb stuff.
Yes. And the score in this to me was just obnoxious. Like, It's just overindulgent people like screaming like ho lo 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 ho de be do ho la 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 ba, like, you know, like, well, I just want to. I'm scared enough. I found maybe just the volume was turned up way too much in my theater. I don't know, but it just felt very loud and obnoxious.
Yeah. So the score, the composer for this did apparently The Lighthouse, The Witch, Black Phone, but also Night Swim. You know, I guess I didn't have a problem with it. The score, it didn't stand out too much to me. So that's my take on the score. It seemed to kind of fit the Nun genre of movies.
Definitely. I feel like it did. I just felt like it was too much. But I think some of the problems I have with it, I was very irritated with it. And then by the end or the beginning of the last act, I was like, oh, I get it. There might some unreliable narrator there. There are some things going on behind the scenes. This is a mystery that you, like, even if you've seen The Omen, this is a mystery that kind of propels over time, and there's secrets, and Ralph Ineson, who plays Father Brennan is a character in the 76 version of The Omen. He's in that movie, played by someone else, obviously, but they look very similar. And that was very interesting to see that. But there was definitely some parts where, like, I found myself laughing even though I shouldn't be. But maybe because there was, like, some of the moments where, like just... you're laughing out of discomfort almost. You're like, whoa. I'll give a trigger warning here. There's a lot of stuff dealing with pregnancy, a lot of maybe horrible rough birthing moments. Yes, and they do not hold back, which I appreciated. But it's a 3.5 movie for me. I enjoyed it. I had a good time. I liked where it went, which was so interesting to me. The whole last act, I was in love with it.
Me too.
Took me a while to get on board. For weird little things.
And that's fine. I'll say my final kind of summary too. So for me, this was probably 4 stars. The more we talk about it, the more I can agree that early on I was like, what is this? This probably isn't going to be that great. But the last 30 minutes or last act really just makes it rise into 4-star territory.
Yeah, you're kind of like, okay, they're going to go there. They're going to go there, you're like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah, yep. And I want to say this too. I think this is a good example, and I don't know how to say this without sounding a certain way, but I'm just going to say it anyway. This is a good example of why diversity in filmmaking is a great thing. You know, this is a woman's story about women, about nuns, about pregnancy. That doesn't mean a man couldn't have directed this, but it's just cool, good that we have women telling stories like this because she is a woman, so she comes from that perspective, right? So it's like, it's just like oh yeah, that's cool. That's good that they got a woman who knows womanly things to direct this and show some of those scenes. And they were, pretty horrific and hard to watch. And there's a scene like where a character faints, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. I could see why someone would faint seeing that in real life. But worth a watch.
Yeah, there were some things where, like, I felt like certain people weren't reacting to things perfectly.
Into people like, okay, come on.
I wish it just had maybe some better editing, is what I would come down to.
Yeah, that's
maybe.
Fair.
Not that it didn't need to be 2 hours long, but, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they could have taken a little bit out too.
Not necessarily like, you know, take out huge chunks, but just slice it to be- together better, you know, so it moves along at a better pace. I don't know.
Yeah. And then the very last thing that I want to say about it is, I mentioned this to you, Mitch, in a text message. There's a pretty well-known cult horror classic called Possession from late 70s, early 80s. There is a scene in this movie that must be an homage to it. It has to be. There's no way it's not. And I thought it was great. It's a strong performance again from our lead actress. And I noticed it, and I noticed the similarities. I guess once I got out, I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, that has to be it. And I just happened to see Possession last year or so. So that was cool. It was cool. It's cool. It's, you know, it's so different when you see, when you have a movie like this that feels good and feels like someone cares and is trying, that does homages.
Yes.
Compared to like Space Jam 2, where they just have characters from Clockwork Orange in it just because they own the rights and it feels like a ripoff. You know what I mean? Like, there's a real difference to that.
This is like the most recent Candyman. Like, you know, somebody went in with their own idea. They, like, you know, they didn't, it's not just trying to let's rip off the franchise and make more money. They got Nia DaCosta, and you know, so I really liked it. And I think when I rewatch it at home next Halloween or something, I'll probably be a 4-star movie.
And I think we should look out for this director. Keep an eye.
Yes. Yes, for sure. For sure. You know. Even if she doesn't keep doing horror, that's fine.
Yep.
Just,
is
she white or I don't know?
I actually don't know. God, that's a good question. I have no idea. I don't even know if she's American.
Well, Arkasha is her name. I don't even see a picture of her, but that's okay. She can be whatever color she wants to be.
All right. So yeah, I'd give it 4. You give it 3.5. We both liked it.
Yes. Good.
Go see it. It's great.
Yes.
It's worth a watch.
All right. Why don't you set us up on Godzilla versus Kong, or Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire?
Yeah, all right. So let's do Godzilla X Kong. So Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, apparently said by the director, the X is silent. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
I know, me too. Apparently it's just supposedly Godzilla Kong, The New Empire.
Yeah, what? Okay, so it's directed by Adam Wingard. He brought us the Godzilla vs. Kong. The Guest, which is cool. Yeah,
good movie.
And You're Next. I think one of the Blair Witches, or was he?
Yeah,
or
he's got a couple stinkers. The 2016 Blair Witch and 2017 Death Note, which
I know people hate.
Yeah, those could have almost ruined his career, but I think he's like, okay, I'm going to go do Godzilla and Kong and try to make up for it.
So the plot here, well, I guess so. It's all we have a lot from the last movie. Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens. He's fun in this.
He's fun.
Kaylee Hoddle, Alex Ferns. Let's see. There's someone else. Oh man, is that it? Yeah, Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, Kaylee Holy, or Hoddle. Sorry, Rachel House. This is a Godzilla and Kong team-up movie, kind of. I think that's what the title is supposed to tell us, since it's not a versus. So this is just the basic plot summary. So following their explosive showdown, Godzilla and Kong must reunite against a colossal, undiscovered threat hidden within our world, challenging their very existence and our own. I very much did not like this movie, and I was kind of bummed about it. Yeah,
okay.
I know.
Okay.
I thought the cold opening was really cool. Let me tell the cold opening to the audience, to our listeners. So the cold opening starts with Kong in his world, which is apparently the Hollow Earth, and he's hunting. He's running around, and he's being hunted. There's these like dog-looking monsters of some kind of trying to corner him, but and you can tell the music cues us in that he's lonely.
It was weird to see him wanking off. We didn't need that.
Yeah, his stash of porn was a weird touch.
Yeah, it was weird.
All the naked monkeys. and it ends by him grabbing one of these dog-looking things, taking it over his head and pulling it apart and having its green blood drip all over him. So early on, I was thinking, like, I wonder if this is like, you know, are they going to go soft and make it only for kids? And then I'm like, oh, well, no, I guess they're really pushing their PG-13 rating.
Yeah.
But then, man, for me, the movie right after that just really, really died. And I was bummed that I didn't like it because this movie made a ton of money at the box office. It had a great second week hold. It like blew out expectations. They were expecting like 60 to 70 million and it made 80, which is like 1 or 2 million below what Dune opened to, Dune 2. So it did incredible. And the audience scores are pretty good. So to me, it was a little bummer because I am out of touch with what audience is like. And so, you know, I'll let you, because I think I know, I think I have an idea. I think you liked it. And I think what audiences will like, and, you know, you listeners might appreciate that just didn't work for me, was this is monster fights. This is all, you know, Kong, Godzilla, and a whole bunch of other monsters they sprinkle in, which I won't spoil. And the human characters really don't mean anything in this. They're kind of just there to move the story along. Rebecca Hall, you know, she's incredible. She's directed a great movie recently. She's been in a couple awesome ones. She gets not much here to do. To me, Brian Tyree Henry here is playing the Justice Smith character from Jurassic World, where it's just like him screaming and acting like a damn fool.
Oh, I get you.
Which was silly because, yeah, that's what I meant. I'm like, he's just like the I'm scared and what are you crazy and just like the. So that was his character. I didn't like the little girl. I didn't like her in the last movie. I didn't like her here. And I thought that it was just way, way, way too over-reliant on CGI. After we get a big budget movie like Dune 2 to just go into this movie, which is all CGI, it was just, a lot of it didn't look that great. I didn't think the Hollow Earth looked kind of like video game graphics, to me. So yeah, once I'm not invested in the people characters, I just couldn't get into it. Yeah. So tell me what did you think about it?
So I get what you're saying and, I can feel what you're saying. And, there's people out there who love the Fast and Furious franchise and it can do no wrong. They're just going to continue watching every single one. They love it. And I will be here for every single Godzilla or Kong movie. And I wasn't looking into too much. Like, I'm sorry. And so I went in just thinking, whatever. I was excited. This, you know, it seemed cool. And this is just totally up my alley. Totally over the top. You know, having fun with it. It doesn't take itself too seriously. There's some funny moments, and you know, they've cut down on the human stuff, which we've complained about before. It's like, okay, well, what's going on with the monsters? Who gives a fuck about these, you know, people, scientists running around trying to do what? Nothing. So the human stuff didn't really bother me here, because I love Rebecca Hall and Dan Stevens' new character. What they did with him was really
fun.
He was
funny.
Yeah.
He was fun.
And yeah, there's some parts with like Godzilla. Like Godzilla's doing his own thing and he's going around and you don't really understand why he's doing this or what, but it's a little like, and you know, he's killing millions of people, but
he's sleeping like a cat in the Roman Colosseum. That was kind of a cute shot.
I love that. And even though he's killing millions of people, everyone's like, hey, don't hurt him because he keeps us safe from the Titans. Okay, but he just took out Puerto Rico. But okay.
And stomped a school.
Yeah.
Full of injured babies.
And I love the Hollow Earth stuff because, like, I'm such a, like, give me a creature feature, give me monsters. That's totally up my realm. God, I don't necessarily know what to say. It was like the first movie in a while where like my critic brain just went away and I was able to just sit and enjoy it. And I felt like a kid again who was excited to, you know, see where it was going to go next. Because I don't think it was necessarily predictable. I did not predict Godzilla was going to jump on, that Kong was going to jump on Godzilla's back and ride into battle against, you know, an ice Godzilla and where it was going to go. I did not expect Kong to body slam a character or give stink eye to Godzilla at one point. I had fun with it. And
And there's nothing wrong with that. That's fine. I think you're not alone. Like, lots of people, audiences, the cinema score is good. I think it's even pretty well critically reviewed. I think it's in the 70s or something.
For me, I think for what this is, it's a 5-star movie. I don't think it's a 5-star movie, but I mean, like, if this seems like something you're interested in, you're gonna like this movie, right? If you are like, I don't know, I'm not a big monkey fighting Godzilla kind of thing, then stay away. It's not your thing. But I think
that's a good way to put it.
If you have any interest, or if you like monsters and you like CGI stuff and stuff, yeah, go see it. It's a lot of fun. I think you can bring your kids and they'll be like, whoa.
I thought this during watching. I think a 9 to 13 year old or so kid will love this movie. Absolutely love this movie. I think I would if I were that age too. But I'll say to the opposite of what Mitch just said, if you just saw Godzilla Minus One and you thought, man, I really like that, let me go check this out. These are polar opposite movies.
Yes.
Polar opposite movies. So, I think maybe that was like the angle I was coming at it from, even though I knew the last one. And the last one I didn't feel this negative toward. There's an obnoxious like VW ad in the early on. She goes to pick her kid up from school. And yes, a nice shot of the Volkswagen, whatever mini SUV she's driving. And yeah, the kid drawing creepy things again, like we talk about that a lot. We just saw that in Night Swim or something else. But you're right. Like if you can do this one as a turn off your brain, watch monsters clobber each other, and that sounds fun, then you'll like this. And I want to say, I didn't hate this movie. This to me is just a 2.5-star, because I did laugh at a lot of stuff, you know, intentionally, unintentionally. And like I said, Dan Stevens' character is funny.
He's literally not for me. A veterinarian for King Kong. King Kong basically comes up from Hollow Earth to say, hey, I have a toothache. And they bring in a titanium tooth, take out the old one, they sedate him. I mean, it's silliness, but it's like, oh my God, like, when are we ever going to see that kind of stuff on screen? Like, it's just, it's a lot of fun, but I sat there going, I could literally tear this movie apart, you know?
Right, right.
But I had so much fun that I don't want to.
Yeah, that's fine. I think the Hollow Earth is silly, and then they talk about a subterranean realm, and I'm like, aren't you already in the subterranean realm?
I know.
And they say, like, this area is unexplored, and I'm like, what do you mean it's unexplored? Like, what, you haven't gone to that area? And then there's a slavery situation going on with one monkey, which kind of feels out of place. And
Basically, Planet of the Apes. Like,
yeah, it was real Planet of the Apes. Like, and we have one of those coming. So anyway, I think we both said enough. And I think that it's cool that we both have kind of differing opinions.
Yeah.
So those people that are listening who would think, oh, I'll probably not like it, or I'm not sure if I'd like it, might fall in my camp. Or if there's someone who's like, hey, I just want to go have a good time and watch monsters clobber each other, I think they would fall into your camp. So,
but yeah, I will Godzilla. I think you can agree with me. If you had a friend who said, like, oh, I think that looks really cool, you would tell them to go see it in theaters, right? Like, a good one to see in theaters.
I do have a friend that's like that. His son likes it, and his son likes all the Godzilla movies. And
oh, cool.
He told me that he's like 6 or 7, and he's like, he's seen them all so many times, he can tell by which roar they hear that which movie it's from. Yeah, he's like obsessed. So I got out and I said to him, I said, Craig, you got to take Asher. You guys will have a blast with this movie. They made me see it in 3D. I think that was a studio thing because the IMAX screens were taken still by Ghostbusters, I think. And, you know, large formats is such a big moneymaker right now. So I bet, I bet at the studio they were like, man, what can we do to make more money? Oh, let's post-process 3D and add a couple. So I had, did you have to see it in 3D?
I don't think so, but there was something I had to see in 3D recently, so it may have been that, but I can't remember.
Okay, yeah, I'm just like, if it was, you know, and if it's not like an Avatar where it's made for 3D,
yeah,
I'm so done with 3D. 3D is just over.
Even if it is an Avatar, I'd rather just watch it 2D. I'm good. Thanks.
True. I'd rather see it in IMAX.
Yeah.
Even Avatar. But yeah, but I did. This, the new Avatar in 3D, I think, was still pretty good. A lot of, you know, the 3D effects, they Cameron and all those, they spend a lot of time. So, and this obviously isn't that. So,
So,
that's Godzilla X Kong. They will make another one, and it's doing just fine. It made almost as much as Dune in its opening weekend, Dune 2.
And just actually one final thing. I have not been, like, a huge fan of the MonsterVerse so far. There's been, like, four or five movies. Like Godzilla versus you know, I've not been like the biggest fan. They're all like three and a half star movies. So I love this more than all of those.
Gotcha. Which, so I would say I'd probably like Skull Island the best.
See, Skull Island would be second or on par with this one for me. I really love Skull Island. Like, because again, for me, It gave like an alien vibe, like going down to like a planet. Oh, no, it's not a planet, but like, you know, and then there's different creatures and right. Those are my top two, because the other movies just could not seem to figure out what to do with the humans. You know, even though they had great actors like Vera Farmiga and Rebecca
Sam
Hall.
Jackson.
Yeah. That's the other guy's name. Anyways. Walter White is
Cranston. Yeah, I didn't like Brian that Cranston. One
because that's what I mean. They had these great actors.
Cranston.
Yeah, Aaron Taylor He's Johnson was in the first one.
Oh yeah, Aaron Taylor Johnson. Yeah. I also didn't like that one. Yeah, so really, I only like Skull Island. Like out of all those to recommend, or which I would watch again, would be Skull Island.
Skull Island's great.
But yeah.
By the way,
I love Sam Jackson's death in that one. Yeah, he gets like a spider leg through his head or something. Or remember, he's like the hard nosed.
That happens to someone else, I think.
You're right. He gets. I remember him dying in a funny way in Skull Island. Anyway, not important.
You also have to think of a movie to assign because I lost the box office draft, by the way.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So while I do this, think about it maybe. It doesn't have to be now. I was just thinking about that. So
I'll bring it to the next episode.
Okay, cool. So Late Night with the Devil.
Next one.
Yes, is a 2024 supernatural horror film. Written and directed by Cameron and Colin Cairns, starring David Dasmalchian and Laura Gordon, Ian Bliss, Fasia Bazzi, and a couple other people. Probably, I didn't really recognize anyone. It focuses on a...
I didn't either.
Yeah, these were all kind of...
I didn't either, but that was a good surprise.
Yeah, they all did well. It takes place on Halloween night in 1977. There is a talk show, and the talk show host, he is losing viewers. And so on Halloween night, he wants to get all these people together, you know, and you know, try to, you know, play tricks like magicians or people who can speak to the dead and
psychics.
Creepy things. Yeah, psychics, and then he gets a little bit more than he bargains for. It is actually funny at the beginning. They keep talking about how their show is called Night Owls with Jack Delroy, played by Dust Malchian. And they're on their sixth season, and they keep talking about they're trying to compete with The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson. And they bring that up, which I found very interesting that they kept bringing up the Johnny Carson. I was like, oh, well, that's cool. Like, and yeah, so they have this, and this is literally takes place over one night. And it's kind of found footage style, but it's like, on a late night set.
Yeah, it uses this framing device.
Yeah. So it's like on a late night set. So it's not like it's not like Blair Witch where the camera's going everywhere and you know, you're getting sick or something, right? But yeah, I don't really know what else.
It's not like Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say. I mean, basically just things start to go more and more wrong. And I think I would say
that framing device to really explain it is, so we're watching supposedly found footage from that 70s recording show. So we're immersed in the 77 show. So we can see the studio audience. We see through the cameras that would show on TV, but then when they cut, we go to black and white and it's like an in-studio documentary kind of viewing.
Yeah,
so when it's not live on air, we're looking at the documentary style and it's in black and white. So you always know where you are. Are we seeing what would be on television or are we seeing the behind the scenes? I think that's a good way to put it.
And this is what I want. If people are going to continue doing found footage, this is what I want. Nobody wants anymore to watch the janky footage, you know, and all that. Like, say it's found footage, but just give us good quality. I mean, you can do it. Come on. Just find ways around
it. Yeah, yeah. This was a really unique idea. Yeah. And, you know, I think a big step for David Desmalchian, because I don't think I've seen him in a lead role in anything.
No,
he kind of has that jawline for villains. I hate to say by his looks, henchman. You know, but he looks like a villain, right? Yeah, he plays, he's in Dune Part One as one of the bad guys. You know, he's in Ant-Man. He's in a whole bunch of stuff. Like The Dark Knight. That's right. I think he's, let me look. Yeah, he's in Bird Box. We saw him in Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Yeah, Ant-Man.
And he was in The Boogeyman. Movies. And he's in a ton of shit. The Suicide Squad. He played the polka dot guy.
Yeah, that may be. So that was probably his last biggest role.
I think he really steps up here.
Sorry, I agree.
Yeah. No, you don't have to say sorry. I think we're delayed because I think you, I don't know. I think maybe your connection is slow, or maybe mine is, but it feels like when I talk, you don't hear it for a second after. But that's okay.
I've noticed that too. But that's okay. We, you know, we don't have a ton left to talk about. But I,
I guess I can give my thoughts on it. Did you notice? The 12 or so or 8 studio logos at the beginning.
Yes, I did.
I thought that there were so many studio logos. I thought that was part of the movie. That was really weird.
I was laughing because it reminds me of that Family Guy joke where Peter's in the theater and he keeps thinking the movie's starting and then it's another logo starting.
I actually laughed the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I thought the exact same thing. I remember that joke from the show. I've seen that episode many, many, many times. And I thought the same, like, it has a plane landing and a guy getting out and it's windy and Peter Griffin's like, oh, what's this guy's story? And then it's like Monkey Studios.
I think, what was I going to say there?
Well, I'll jump in and just say, I thought this was great. It totally surprised me. This is one of those where it comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It comes out of nowhere. You know, this has a 2023 date on it. So it must have done a festival run.
Yeah.
And And David Desmalchian does a really good job playing a late night talk show host. Like, it's really surprising how well he does. And, yeah. You know, so the movie goes like this. It starts out with a psychic coming in, doing a reading on the crowd, and then it kind of steps it up. Then the next one is a skeptic who comes in and says, this is all bullshit. Then something crazy happens with the psychic, and then kind of the bigger thing that comes in is a woman who has been possessed, who is in a cult, who's being treated, comes in, and supposedly she has a demon within her, and the host of the show, what'd you say his name was?
Jack Delroy?
Jack Delroy wants her to summon this demon inside this, like, kind of cute, you know, well-dressed younger woman, and have her do a show on stage. Like you said, it's sweeps week, which is an old term in TV where they would, the ratings were being calculated, so they would purposely do, you know, mashup shows or reunion shows and stuff to try and get ratings. And yeah, this was great. It has a style to it. I like the music in it. I had no idea where it was going to go. Overall, it's just really, really good, and I could see watching this again. Even the poster is really cool. It's kind of him with his body on fire, his head on fire.
Yeah. But
there was one thing that I didn't like. They could have cut it out completely, and I'm not going to spoil it because it is the very end of the movie. But there's a plot point in the movie where David Desmalchian is part of this, like, you know, Mason group or the Illuminati, right, or the what do they call them, the globalists or the elite, like he's part of some
elite cult.
it's like a country club, but people think, like, it's conspiracy,
kind of like Scientology, where it's like, if you join us, like, you know, you will do well in your Hollywood career kind of thing, but it's more like a cult.
And I thought that part of it should have been just cut out completely.
Yeah.
Because we don't get enough about it.
Yeah.
So, like, other than that, I thought this was excellent. And it was a really nice surprise. And critics are loving this one.
Yeah.
And I think it's totally worth a watch anytime, anywhere. I think it comes out on Shudder on
this weekend or
this weekend. Yeah. Yeah. So by the you hear this, it's probably on Shudder.
April 19th, so next weekend, sorry.
This is unique. This is the movie that I'm going to say when someone says, man, they don't make any new movies, it's all remakes, I'm going to say, did you see
this?
Exactly.
Right?
Like, it's not perfect. It's not like a Hereditary where it's, like, terrifying, but it's just good. It's just really, really good, and a unique story. This is all different. Like it's found footage, but it's a cool spin on the, quote, found footage style. So, yeah, I liked it. What did you like it overall? Did you rate it highly?
I love this movie. I think it's destined to become a classic. I think this is what people like. This would be a great Halloween night watch, like with your friends.
Definitely.
Right. It's so good. And especially for people who haven't seen it, like, if the tension builds and builds and you don't know where it's going, you don't know who to believe. Yeah, it's really great. There's one guy, he gets a little annoying, but he's like the skeptic, you know, and he's been brought on the show to, you know, disprove and kind of like, he has this thing where he's like, I will give you $5,000 or something if I can't prove you wrong. Like, if I can't figure out how you did something, then I will give you the money kind of thing.
And this is actually true. There is a real person. I know this from back to the beginning of episode talking about science.
Mm.
There is a person, a foundation, who has a standing $1 million offer blank check to someone that can prove they are a psychic in a double blind test. Meaning, you know, have a control, have actual subjects and see if that, and many have tried and it hasn't been done yet. And I'll look for more information because I'm pretty sure I've heard of this before. Richard Dawkins, who is the guy that, you know, is like a famous atheist. He's probably the most famous atheist. He mentioned it in one of his books I read called The God Delusion. That was cool to see. It's a real world thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is great. It's the night, it's late great. Night with the devil. Definitely see it. I gave it 4 stars, probably 4.5 even.
I will just quickly touch on the two big news stories that have come out from this movie. I don't know if you've heard about them, but
I have.
The big one is kind of a funny one. On its opening weekend on the Sunday, it made $666,666. So it made 666666. So that was pretty interesting. It got a lot of traction there. And then, obviously, there's been the other criticism because they used some AI-generated art. So this movie had, you know, a lot like in old TV shows, they have those screens where it says, "We'll be right back," and it's like some sort of picture, right? Three of those were apparently AI-generated images. I thought they all looked really good. I thought it was all interesting to see. It felt classic. And it looks like they made a lot of them, but three of them were AI generated. So that's garnered a whole discussion. I know people who are boycotting this movie because of it. And it's opened a lot of discussion. Middle Class Film Class, my buddies over there at that podcast, and our Cinematics Facebook group, which everyone can join. We've been talking about it there. What are your thoughts on that?
I actually don't think boycotting this movie is the right move. I understand the complaints, but this is an indie horror movie. It's low budget. You know, if it was done in a Godzilla vs. Kong type movie, then I can see doing that. But here you're really just harming small independent creators and artists that work to make this. I don't think what they used the AI for is that egregious. I don't have a problem with it in this case. I saw a lot of Letterboxd reviews were like 1.5 star, not gonna see it because they used AI, and I just think AI is coming and we're gonna have to figure out a way to work with it while keeping like there's just no stopping it at all. And again, for what they used it for, those technical difficulties, that's really not that important of a thing. It's not the opening, you know, opening crawl.
So,
I don't really have a problem with it. I heard the concern, and I just think like boycotting this movie for that reason isn't helpful to the overall cause. If this movie tanks, let's say this movie totally tanked and everyone hated it because of AI, is that going to make that a difference? I doubt it, because this movie isn't going to make much money anyway. But if it was a big studio movie or something, then I could get behind it or at least understand it. But
And like we said, the movie was released in 2023. AI's just been coming up. Maybe when they made it, they were probably like, "Oh, cool! Like we'll just do this." And then it became more and more of a huge issue.
And it had to have been made pre-strike, because if this was came out in 23, the strike happened at the end of 23. So this had to have been before the strike. So before the AI conversation was really a big deal. So I don't think it's fair to hold it against this movie.
No, I like you said, I think if we see bigger movies start doing stuff like this, then even if it's small things, if like you have a good budget and you're using AI, I think that's unfair. But I wouldn't, you know, hold this against that movie.
Do you remember this same conversation came up with the Anthony Bourdain documentary?
No, I don't.
So in the Anthony Bourdain documentary, which I think is excellent, have you seen it?
I think I vaguely remember you talking about it.
Yeah, it made pretty big waves. People love it. They used AI processing because they had emails that he had written. Right? They had emails he'd written to his partner, but they didn't have him reading these emails, right? So, but they had plenty of his voice from his TV show.
Right.
So they used a language model to make him read the emails out loud. So that's kind of blurring the line, because these are his words. He said them in an email. He didn't actually say them into a microphone. So, but there were a lot of people kind of up in arms about it there. And that's a totally different situation.
I also heard some people who loved that.
I thought it was kind of cool and creative. And I mean, a documentary by default is like is exploitative. It is showing you everything about a person. And you know, if they made up words, if they put words in his mouth, that's like really gross and disrespectful. Yeah. But again, he wrote an email to his friend or business partner, and they, to use it better in a movie, they had it as audio instead of text on screen. I thought it was okay. So yeah,
I agree.
I was okay with it. But yeah, this, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is a story and topic that we're going to just have to continue to talk about, because it's just going to keep coming up.
I can only imagine that we will be talking about this a lot over the next year or two, or
this is
going to be a continuation.
Yep.
So yeah, did you watch Roadhouse?
I didn't.
On the plane? You were?
I didn't get to it. No.
Okay.
I saw Monkey Man, and if you see that, we can review it. I like it. Okay. It's great. It's Dev Patel. He's awesome in it. I saw Officer and a Gentleman that was showing the other day. Richard Gere looks like he's unrecognizable. He's so young. I didn't recognize him, man. It's kind of like seeing the Godfather original again, and just seeing how young Al Pacino is. So it was anyway, good movie. Cool. But no, I haven't seen Roadhouse yet.
Okay.
I ended up watching something else. That Girls State documentary.
Yes. I'm going to watch both those. And then we should discuss them.
Yeah, I would do that. I would like to do that. So yeah. But yeah, we can close out or get ready to close, and then let's, you know, say on next episode we'll make sure we'll do the box office update and pick our movies.
Yeah.
Maybe and then just one I'll, or two. Yeah, and I'll give and I'll create one for you to watch.
Yeah, think of one that you want me to watch. I also, just if anybody's looking for something to watch, I did watch this new horror movie called Lovely, Dark, and Deep. I don't know if you heard of that one.
No.
It's Lemon, a new backcountry ranger, travels alone through the dangerous wilderness, hoping to uncover the origins of a tragedy that has haunted her since she was a child. Not very good, in my opinion. I only gave it 2 stars. I think maybe if it's maybe just kind of went over my head. But I personally would just skip it. It's kind of like one of those, you don't know what's going on and blah, blah, blah. Like she's seeing things from her past and yeah. So,
And I did see that Wicked Little Letters movie with, Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley,
which it's you funny. Can buy, rent on VOD right now. So,
right. Yeah. So
would you suggest people to,
if you're looking for something totally different and you love Olivia Colman or Jesse Buckley or both, they're both great. It's full of profanity. The whole, okay. I'll just say the premise real quick. It's a true story-ish, you know, based on a true story set in London in the 50s or something. Two women neighbors, one of them is getting these horrible, horrible letters. And it's just like, it's so funny and quaint to think back then. Like getting a letter in the mail that said like, you're a dirty whore and a stupid smelly bitch. What, like the, you know, the mom, the old mom in the movie is like, oh, why I never, my you pearls. Know, and a guy's monocle falls out. Not really, but you know what I mean? So like, and it became a real like news story because these letters start going to judges and the politicians.
Thank you for listening to the.
And anyway, it's really funny. If you come across it, it's called Wicked Little Letters. Of course, Olivia Colman is so, so, so good in it. So yeah,
I'm gonna watch it.
It's cute and funny. Yeah, I think you'd get a kick out of it. Like,
so it's a comedy.
It's different. Definitely a comedy. Definitely a comedy. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
And it's pretty short. It definitely doesn't feel like 2 hours if it is. So yeah, this is another one of those. It's marked as a 2023, but it's just now in theaters in April, mid April. Yeah. So yeah, that's one others that I had seen recently. So yeah.
All right.
Well, that's it.
And again, thank you everyone for bearing with us. We will be back as soon as possible with another episode, and we will make up for lost time.
Yeah, we got this. Let's do it.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Hollywood Persona Podcast. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at The Hollywood Persona. Feel free to email the show at thehollywoodpersona@gmail.com and make sure to rate, share, and follow on whatever platform you're listening to our show on. It's the little things that help. Thank you.
And you little shithead, you're staying here.
All right.